Hey there, Fangirl Nation. You are listening to Fangirl Sports Network's Get My Job podcast on Believe. I am your host, Tracy Sandler, and I am so excited to be joined today by host for the Tennis Channel and host of the Believe in Rams podcast, which can also be seen on Bally Sports West, Erin Coscarelli. Erin talks about her career journey, serving up authenticity, looking at criticism as feedback, and so much more. It's an awesome episode, so let's get to it. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Erin, thank you so much for joining me today for Get My Job. I've been very excited to have you on. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Tracy. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So let's jump right in because you are doing so many cool things right now. And so I'd love for you to take us through your professional journey, how you got started in this industry, and how you got to where you are right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a little bit about me. Grew up in Southern California. I had two older brothers. So, you know, athletics and myself playing sports, I played everything growing up. I loved just being outdoors and just being a total tomboy. And it really lent itself to figuring out the infusion of what I ended up deciding to pursue long term. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I liked to talk to people and learn about them. And then I was an athlete growing up, which was a nice marriage, if you will, for later in life, kind of figuring out and fine tuning that skill set as I went to USC. And at USC at the time, you know, it was the Pete Carroll era. Mm-hmm. So we had Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart. And of course, the team went to the national championship. And I was really fortunate at the time. They didn't have a professional sports team. And really, the career kind of found me. I remember one day I was either a junior, I think I was a junior, yeah, in college in Spanish class. And again, the Erin in Spanish class took very little Spanish notes and, you know, conversed and chatted with everyone in my classroom. And so this friend of mine, Kevin, actually, he became a producer in the unscripted world. But at the time, he said, hey, you know, USC football, the website needed a college reporter. Would you be interested in looking into that? And I was like intrigued by it. You know, of course, loving sports growing up, admiring my older brothers and trying to be, I guess, just get attention in the household. Mm-hmm. I was excited about it. And of course, you know, I think that was an opportunity that made me and lent itself to the uniqueness of getting some really great experience in covering a pretty coveted team. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time they were number one in the nation and a lot of media. And I learned on the job. I mean, I was terrible at first, of course, as all of us are when we're first starting out. And, you know, I really just kind of liked getting into the mindset, the mentality of the athlete, which is such a microcosm for life, right? I mean, how do these athletes with, you know, so much pressure on their shoulders, how do they navigate tough times? How do they come back after a loss? You know, and so I love that element of sports, that it sort of is a bigger picture for what we go through, whether we're in the boardroom or in a pitch meeting, or we have to do public speaking or anything that can throw us off. How do we realign ourselves and get back into the win column? And also take those losses. And so I guess that propelled me in a way where I just continued to follow the passion. Shortly after college, I was a PA at Eyewitness News. I realized I did not enjoy hard news.
Fair.
But it was a great experience. I was in the studio. I did teleprompter. I ran scripts to the talent. And I think those are always great, like, beginning reference points for anyone, even if they're like, this isn't for me. I think do as many things you don't like so you can start to understand what you do like. So I had a few internships, Fox Sports West. I worked for MTV News. And then shortly after that stint at Eyewitness News, I got a job with the World Series of Poker for ESPN. Mm. And it was a great, you know, little beginning launch point, because at the time poker was highly watched actually on ESPN. And then, you know, those producers were great to work with. I then got a job with those same producers to do, the X Games, the Summer X Games. And then, you know, the rest is history, because I think I started to really realize this was going to be the career path for me. And I was willing to do anything, whether I needed to live somewhere else or work holidays. And of course, as you know, being a broadcaster, that's definitely the sacrifice you make. A lot of my job, especially starting out, was an overnight shift. I was doing, you know, the graveyard shift at Eyewitness News, which was awful. But then also, fast forward, I at NFL Network was the morning show host for a handful of years, and I would go into work at midnight, wrap at 7 a.m., and I was exhausted, but I loved what I did. I loved the energy in the studio, and I loved, you know, the hype of talking about the games and, you know, just taking a pulse of the excitement of the fans and what they were excited about, and sort of being that conduit to telling that story. And I think at the end of the day, why I love my job is the storytelling, human connection that we get to offer to fans, which is like, what's it like to be in the shoes of a Tom Brady, you know, or any type of athlete that otherwise is so focused on winning games? How do they navigate? I'm always curious, even their home life, you know, who are these guys when their jersey's off? And they're not, you know, the pads are off and they're with their families and they're with their kids. And so I, you know, I love this job. It's amazing. I kind of fell into it, but I think the coolest part is the element of being like infinitely curious. When I have young people asking me for advice, I just say, hey, are you curious about other people and how they live their lives? And can you create a space where there's the opportunity to tell that story, then you're one major step ahead of everyone else. Because I think that's the hugest part of what drives my passion in this business.
That is fantastic. And I relate to that. That's what I do often with the 49ers, is do those stories that are off the field and get to know the guys differently. And you get to know them as human beings, and they like to share that, and people like to hear that. And that, I agree with you. It's the storytelling that is really one of the most fun parts. So fast forward to now, you're at the Tennis Channel. You're hosting the Believe in Rams podcast here on the Believe Network. How did those things come about? And tennis, was that always a passion? Did this just kind of happen? I would just love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I've been with Tennis Channel now, I want to say at least 3 or 4 years. I was always doing tennis while I was juggling the world of NFL. Before the Believe in Rams, I was doing the Raiders. And before that, actually in the middle of COVID, I was hosting and a correspondent for this ABC surf show called The Ultimate Surfer. Unfortunately, it only went for one season, but it was amazing. It was kind of, so the executive producers of the show for Ultimate Surfer, it was Pilgrim Media, which, you know, collaborated with Dana White, and they had The Ultimate Fighter. So they were like, this is kind of a similar, you know, aligned sport. Let's blow it up. Let's give it an element of reality. Let's give it an element of competition. And I was so fortunate. I got to stay at the Kelly Slater Surf Ranch, that if you're a surfer, it's one of the, you know, coolest. It's in the middle of the farms of Bakersfield, which you would think, how is, yeah, exactly. Are you scratching your head now? Are you really confused?
So no, Kelly, I've actually, oddly enough, spent some time in Bakersfield for various things. So I understand it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, so it's the city of Lemoore. Okay. And it's in the middle of, you know, the cow fields of Bakersfield. Amazing. And Kelly Slater, several years ago, wanted to invent or come up with a completely on-demand surf environment. So he created, they call it the perfect wave, which is like a 6-foot wave in the middle of the farms. And it's like, it's in actually the World Surf League that they, the tour is, they have it at the surf ranch and, you know, all these surfers come and it's like in an arena. It's really interesting.
I bet that was just a cool thing to get to be a part of a little bit.
Oh, it was the raddest 4 weeks of my life. We were up in, you know, the middle of the country, if you will. And you know, it was in the middle of COVID. So that also threw an odd wrench in the plans. We were the first show that SAG approved of to start working. So when I say it was odd, you know, we had to stay in a hotel for 3 days, get tested. Once our test came back negative, then they put us in, and it felt like summer camp because it really was like a camp or ranch. And then they had us all stay in separate RVs, which, by the way, was awesome.
You and Jim Harbaugh. I said, You and Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so rustic and really cool because everyone on set, everyone, the cast and crew were just like amazing. You know, surfers are pretty incredible humans. You know, they're like into the waves and into the water and they just want to surf all the time. And I got to work with Kelly Slater. In fact, he kind of showed me how to surf our last day. I was not allowed to surf the entire time because if I slipped on a surfboard and broke my nose, I wasn't going to be able to do the show. So they were like, you need to stay off a surfboard. But yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. I wish that show would have gone on forever. But after that happened and we were done filming, you know, obviously went into post-production, I started my Raiders job. And like I said, it was in the middle of COVID. So it was such a strange time to, you know, the team moved to Vegas. We had this Ferrari of a studio and yet a skeleton crew to run it because, you know, we weren't even allowed to get close to the athletes or the players or the coaches. And that's the first time I've ever experienced covering a team and not being able to put a mic in front of them, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting time to, you know, be in Vegas and then cover this team. And then, you know, the following year had a very interesting, tumultuous year, right? We had the whole Henry Ruggs situation happen. And then, you know, John Gruden. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say John Harbaugh. That's so funny because you said
Because I said Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, yeah. Wrong NFL coach. Anyways, so needless to say, everything kind of falls in its place. And I love tennis. I didn't play tennis actually growing up.
Okay.
I do play a little bit more pickleball. But I love the sport. I love that I get to cover women coming from the world of NFL. And then the Rams gig just popped up because, you know, they knew I was from LA. They knew, you know, the people that Believe, who I'm sure you're familiar with, it's a great place to be. It's a great, to be able to cover my hometown team in LA, of course I wasn't going to say no to that opportunity. So,
That's awesome. I love it. I absolutely love it. And you're right. It's so funny when you were talking about COVID and, you know, not being able to be like near the coaches and the players, everything being on Zoom. I had this kind of, I don't know what the word is, but this like a visceral reaction to it, just remembering how weird that was and talking to people on Zoom. And we would go to practice during training camp or just anytime during the year, and then would have to sit outside the facility and Zoom with the people who were inside the facility. It was just such a weird time. So sorry for that tangent, but it just
you had a visceral reaction to what I said just now.
I did because it made me think of like that time of sitting outside of the Levi's Stadium, going to practice, and then sitting at the benches outside. They had benches set up for us, waiting for practice to be done, and then Zooming with the players. And sometimes having that moment, do I have time to go home to get to the Zoom? Do I not have, have time to go home? Like, it just, when you said that, it was just such an interesting time. And I'm kind of glad you brought it up, not to dwell on it, but it just shows though, when we talk about storytelling, how we found a way and you can still do it, but boy, it was a different time.
Well, yeah. And I think it's important to let people know at home sort of what it was like. You know, I remember when we were in the studio, you know, everybody had to wear a mask except for the talent, right? So it was me and two other guys. And week in and week out, especially that first season, because I don't think the vaccine issue was, you know, so we're taking a gamble that if one of us gets COVID, there's no one to replace us. There won't be a host for the following week. You know, it was like the wild, wild west. And I think the visceral reaction is appropriate because it was like the most bizarre time. I mean, I was flying to Vegas, you know, twice a week, wearing a full hazmat suit just because I didn't want to get my co-hosts, my colleagues sick. I didn't want to get sick. I didn't want to bring anyone to my family. I didn't want to get them sick, you know, and to not marinate on it, but the broadcasters and the people that kept the show going, I tip my hat to them because it wasn't easy. It was a really, you know, we didn't have fans in the stadium for a lot of the different, I know Florida still had it, but I mean, we didn't have it in Vegas, and it was just so weird to go to this amazing, you know, Allegiant's gorgeous, to go to Allegiant and to not have any fans that first season. It was just very strange. I mean, and I'm glad you mentioned it because we don't really look back because it was such a challenging time. But we made it through football still. I mean, and I remember too, they were talking about like, could NFL not happen this season? And then remember when guys, I forget the entire offensive line got sick. I forget what team that was.
Oh, yes, for sure. I mean, the 49ers had a situation on a Thursday night football game. There was like a close contact thing. And there were like, I mean, I kid you, there were like 8 or 9 people. It was one of those things that if it wasn't Thursday night football, the game probably would have been pushed. Like if it was a Sunday game, but it was a Thursday game. And it was like, there was a cornerback that they put, I'm not even going to say his name because the poor guy, he played so terribly, but it was so not his fault because he like, it was, I'm being a little hyperbolic, but not really. It was like hours before the game where they were like, well, you were signed to the practice squad 27 minutes ago, and now we are activating you to play in the game. And it wasn't quite that, but it was like maybe 24 hours. It was so quick, the turnaround, and the poor guy played awful. And I felt so bad for him because it was national television and everyone's at home watching this game, but they just didn't have any choices. And it was, and so I don't even want to say his name because I don't want to do that to the person. But it was just one of those, it was a crazy time. It was definitely a crazy time.
It's so funny, right? I mean, how many of those weird situations happen? I can't remember. It was someone that, it was, I want to say, was it the Bills? I can't really remember. But anyways, the entire offensive line was sick. And then you put your quarterback behind your backups. You know what I'm saying? You put your franchise guy behind, you know, a completely not inexperienced, but you know, they're not your top guys. I mean, you know, it was so crazy back then. But anyways, yeah, we made it through. Here we are, 2024, which is really diabolical, but whatever.
That is, it really is. So I wanna go back to your switch kind of from NFL to tennis, and maybe switch isn't quite the right word because you're still doing NFL, but you grew up an athlete. There is a point to me doing this intro like this, so bear with me. You grew up an athlete, and generally when a reporter makes a switch from one sport to the other, adds to one sport to the other, do you think it helps that you grew up an athlete so you understand all, like right off the bat, you understand the human element, you understand what goes into every day of practice? Do you think that's helpful as you're navigating from sport to sport?
You know, of course. I think I'm not going to go too deep here, but maybe I will.
You can.
You know, I think the reason I love the broadcast in sports, and I always say to people, I don't think I'm a sports broadcaster. I think I'm a person that studies people who just happen to play sports. And the reason I'm the most fascinated in the athlete or the people that play professional sports is how much I can relate to them. And what I mean by that is I focused so much of my youth and really, you know, the beginning parts of my professional career on performance, right? And that's the athlete mindset. Like, I need to make sure I you know, I get as many W's in the win column as I can. And I think if we have too much of an attachment to our self-worth on the performance aspect, we don't know how to handle the losses or the elements of, you know, that can come with the struggles of being either an athlete, a performer, a TV host. You know, I think that's the thing that I'm the most fascinated by, because I had done that. You know, I had spent a lot of my youth and even in the beginning parts of my, you know, professional broadcast career, trying to overcompensate and perform with perfection. And I think, you know, that's why I enjoy the sports element. I enjoy the mental health component of it. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, if I've played all the sports, which I did, I played except for, you know, tennis and golf. I really didn't play when I was growing up. It's lent itself to me having a better understanding of A, the sport, but also more importantly, what the athlete may be going through.
And I think that's an advantage. It's a great, you know, it's a great thing to have right off the bat. There's kind of an emotional intelligence piece that you have going into it that I think is very cool. So when I look at the different things you're doing, and you talked about being at the Raiders, and then this opportunity came up with Believe in Rams, I want to talk a little bit about building relationships in this industry and how important that is, and how you go about building them in an authentic way.
Well, you know, relationships are so important, whether it's on the field, off the field, in the work environment, outside the work environment. And I've had to learn the hard way, the value of it. You know, I think for a long time I started out and I just really cared about myself. Mm-hmm. And how can I get to the top of the mountain as quick as I can? I had hosted a women's event, and it was for women in business. And I learned how, through my losses, actually, how much I needed support, female support for sure. And, you know, it was very humbling to realize the value of relationships, you know, in and out of work. And one of the things that I remember the most was when I was an intern, I remember two different types of people and how they treated me. Mm-hmm. I remember my producer there, who was not pleased, just was not happy to be at work.
Okay.
And it was written all over that particular person's face. They were just really cold and, you know, they didn't radiate joy. Okay. And then there was someone else, and I'm happy to say, Dallas Raines, who's the legendary weather guy.
He is a legendary weather guy. I grew up in Los Angeles, so
yeah.
Legendary.
Very, 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 very nice guy. And he would come in to work and he would say hi to all of us, you know, production assistants, and he would know our names. And I remembered how that made me feel. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that when and if I ever became in a position of talent, quote unquote talent, or on camera, I was going to make sure I treated everyone with kindness, with respect. And it's easy, Tracy, to treat the boss well. It's easy to be nice to the girl or guy who could advance your career. But I believe how you stand out is how you treat the intern, how
100%.
You treat the makeup artist, how you treat the camera guy. And what I will say is people are always watching, you know, so with regards to building relationships, you know, I would say one thing I've learned is get to know people and make it a priority to concern yourself with the well-being of what's going on in their life. And I think that not only makes you, you know, a great coworker, but a great person. And it's like such a nice return on investment when you're just good, when you're just a nice person, you know.
And it's not that hard to be a nice person.
No. And, you know, I think a lot of times people have stuff going on in their lives. Like, for instance, you know, maybe that producer that I would say was not super perky or happy mm-hmm. at work. You know, I've learned it's not. And so I guess the second part of that is what I've really learned is not to take things personal anymore. You know, if someone comes in and they're fired up and they're like seething, they're coming in hot from like, maybe they didn't get a good night's sleep. Maybe they got in a fight with their wife. Maybe their kid's not doing well in school. Who knows, you know? And I think when you start to remove that you're the reason someone's having a bad day, which is not always easy to do, you know, someone can come in and be a total jerk. And then you're like, well, that, you know, like, and you make it about you. I've really relinquished that, taking things as personal, and it's paid off immensely because everyone's stressed out. This industry is not always easy. It's a high pressure job. People are, you know, I think the thing, as I'm sure you've become very good at, is kind of compartmentalizing your professional life with your personal life. It's not easy, but mm-hmm. you know, we have to do that. So, not taking things as personal and just sort of treating everyone kindly with respect has been, you know, I think that's the, when I say build relationships, I say build relationships with everyone, not just the boss.
And I think both of those things are great career and life advice, and the not taking things personally and treating everybody with kindness and respect. And I think in this industry, and this is probably true of a lot of industries, it's just that we're, of course, ingrained in this one. I think the not taking things personally is so helpful because sometimes you could go up to talk to a player, you could to have an interview set, and they are human too, and they have things going on in their lives. And the person could potentially snap at you. The person could say, I can't do this today, whatever it is. And it's not personal. You didn't do something wrong. No one's mad at you, but everybody has stuff going on in their lives, and it's important to remember that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if we can, you know, I love that Maya Angelou quote, which is, it's not what you say or what you do, it's how you make people feel.
Yeah.
And we are in such a fast paced business. And one of the things is, it's just like slow it down and acknowledge people, make people, you know, just, I think there's another great quote, which is like, if you want to, I forget how it goes, but it's basically shine a spotlight on other people's superhero powers. Uh-huh. And I think I've gotten better at doing that because I think at the end of the day, everybody just wants to do the best they can with what they're going through. And if you can sort of just like bring in a little bit, you know, lighter energy, which is not always easy. It's been a stressful few years for people. I get it. But life is short. So
I think that is true. I think everything you're saying is very, again, good life and career advice. So I appreciate you sharing all of it. When you look back on the early parts of your career, was there a criticism you received? And I asked this of most of our guests, is there a criticism you received early on that was kind of tough to take, but really helped you? And I always say this to our guests, and we could go a couple directions. It could be something constructive that wasn't your favorite thing to hear, but you're like, okay, they were right. It made me a better host, a better reporter, just better at my job. Or it could be something that was really uncalled for, unnecessary, untrue, and you had to learn that you kind of with the can't take things personally, who you can trust and listen to and who you can't.
You know, I think I've had to reframe criticism. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's important to share that with like young people who may be listening, because again, the person, you know, taking things personal, I've had a million producers tell me a million contradicting things. Some mm-hmm. producers like a style one way and other producers like a style another way, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if I, you know, I don't remember all the, I mean, girl, I got a lot of criticism, but you know, I think it was how I heard it that really mattered. And I think if you swap out criticism and instead insert feedback,
love that.
I think that's helpful because I needed to strive for perfection. Not only was that exhausting, it's just boring. You know what I mean? Like it stripped me of who I was because I tried to be like, whether it was the analyst, you know, like I needed to be as smart as the analyst. Well, I didn't play football for a living, so that's not going to work.
Right.
Or, you know, I needed to be the way maybe my predecessor was. And I had to remove this, you know, I would say the criticism that I would hear or the feedback I really needed to listen to is who am I and what am I here for? You know, and one of the things that was really interesting, I remember early on in my sideline reporting career, when I would do a hit, you know, oftentimes for college football, my producer in my ear would go, good job, kid, or nice work, or, you know, thumbs up, or he or she would give me validation. So I got so hooked on that, like, verbal thumbs up after my hits mm-hmm. that when I didn't hear it, I would go into a tizzy.
I can understand
that. And I was so hooked on the verbal validation of someone approving of me. And it's like, you know, you talk about imposter syndrome and, you know, believing in yourself and who are you and do you have value and why are you there? And I think that's something you gain with experience and with, you know, a little bit of age. But if I could give advice to young people, there's no real right way to do things, especially now. Media is so different now. I think the only right way you can do things is serve up authenticity mm-hmm. and be the best version of you and sort of undeniably and unapologetically give that to the audience. Because I think fans and listeners and viewers, they just want someone with a perspective because it's like, I can go get that information online and read it. Why I'm tuning into the Tracy Show is because I like the person you are, you know? Mm-hmm. So criticism, feedback, whatever it's called, you know, I think if you can just learn to understand what your voice is and that you have impact, I think that was the thing I always struggled with when I was younger because I was like, well, I'm not a football player. So why am I here? And do I have the accolades to support it? Like that was always the biggest struggle that I had. And once I got over myself, again, I was like so ego minded. I needed the validation. Once I got over that, I kind of like shed this, a bit of this insecurity that the audience, you know, didn't deserve. You know, the audience just wants a good time, you know? So It not only did it help the audience, it definitely helped me.
Well, and they go hand in hand. You know, yeah. You become better and more confident in your job and that shines through in your work. And then the audience enjoys that as well. But I think that's all very important. When you look at where the industry was when you first started and you look at where it is today, how have you seen opportunities grow and change for women, and how can we still improve?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, people always ask me, you know, what's it like being a woman? And, you know, especially in such a male-dominated industry. And, you know, when I was at my previous jobs, 80% was a male population in the production meetings, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you add on top of the fact that I, you know, was maybe seemingly getting perceived or judged differently because of what I wore or the mm-hmm. way I carried myself or the emphasis of knowledge that I needed to have. Meaning, you know, if I mispronounced a name, I'm not getting the same forgiveness if my perhaps male colleague did, you right. know? I had to shift this knowing that I was not going to be some accomplished pro athlete, but right. I had to invest in I matter and the things I say are interesting and how I look at things are interesting. And at the end of the day, I am a fan. So if I'm representing the fan because I am the fan, mm-hmm. I think that's all that matters, you know, whether I'm a female or a male. And that I really felt like that was the thing I needed to work on in order to feel like I really deserved to sit at the table with these, you know, accomplished, you know, male pro athletes. And I am excited to see the future. It, you know, you're seeing so many more women because A, women, you know, are also fans, but also they have a lot to contribute. The way I interview, my interview style is probably going to be different than a male interview style. And both are interesting. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
I wonder, this is slightly off topic, but as you were talking, I just thought of this male and female. There are a couple questions I get as a female sports reporter that I don't think men get. And I'm just curious, I'm going to start asking more guests this. Do you get asked how you got into sports? Because I get asked that all the time and no one asks my brothers that. And then mm-hmm. do you get asked if you're actually a sports fan or if this is just something you do?
That's so funny. I mean, you're so spot on with uh-huh. Both of those questions. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Both of those questions didn't bother me. And they don't really bother me now. But you're right. There's definitely like a difference between the sort of curious nature behind someone actually asking a female and then kind of not really being curious about asking a male because there's this assumption that men just love sports and that it's, you know, different for women to be a fan of sports. Yes, I have gotten both of those questions. Yeah. Yeah.
They bother me a little, not a ton. I mean, it's not like someone asked them, like, oh, I can't believe you would ask me that. But I do think, especially the one about do you actually like sports? Because that one I actually, in some ways, and maybe this is a me thing, so and not taking things personally, I'm going to take your advice. I find that one almost like a little bit offensive. Like, of course I actually like sports. Like, that's like, you couldn't do this job if you don't actually like sports. You can't get into this job just because you like sports, but honestly, could you imagine being just dropped in this job and being like, well, I know you hate sport. I don't know why I find that one. I find in some ways more bothersome, but that might be a me thing. And I have to take some Aaron advice and not take things personally.
Well, the way you don't take it personal, right, is just going, a lot of times I have empathy for someone's inability to see things in the way maybe you can see things or in the way
that's fair.
Someone else can see things. And so I've had to learn when I get those kind of curveball questions, it's just a reflection of their ability to understand things. And it's okay. You know what? Hey, I'm here to like, I'm open if you're curious about me actually liking sports. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm okay with answering that. But it is a head scratcher. And it's funny because I think you're right. I think that question probably doesn't get asked to a lot of men these days.
No, probably not. Someone asked me once, she actually said, so wait, you're telling me there are women who will actually watch sports without a man? And this was early on and when I started Fangirl and they asked about it and I said it was, you know, mainly for female fans and obviously a lot of male fans like it too. But I wanted content that spoke to female fans and they were like, wait, you're saying there are women who like sports without a man? And it's funny, that one didn't bother me. That one I was like, oh, like kind of how you said, like you're seeing things differently. And I was like, yeah, there actually are. And it was kind of nice to get to explain the company. But It is funny the questions that we get asked, and it is what it is. There are some parts of this business that are probably not going to change for a very long time, but sometimes we do get these questions where I'm like, this is the funniest question. Like if you actually sat back and thought about the question, it's such a funny question.
Well, I think, I think when you explore leadership and you have men who are in leadership, you know, there have been times where, you know, the concept of mansplaining can mm-hmm. be frustrating. It's not certainly happening nearly as much, but because I think men have not only accepted, but also supported more women getting into the business. Mm-hmm. But if it's coming from a small-minded perspective of, I don't know. You know, a lot of times it's very interesting. When I was renovating my house, I would have, you know, contractors or building or builders come over, and oftentimes they would look for the guy mm-hmm. to have those types of conversations with, you know. And in those moments, I would very much get very frustrated because I'm here and I'm also very capable of discussing anything with mm-hmm. regards to renovations or construction. And, unfortunately, we just have to somewhat be patient as we're all transitioning into a different way of doing things and, you know, give people the opportunity or maybe the benefit of the doubt mm-hmm. and, you know, try to be patient with it, because it doesn't do us any good to be frustrated that someone's lack of understanding is in any way a reflection of us. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it is a great opportunity to teach somebody and tell them about something and help them think in a different way, right? And in a way that they just really weren't even thinking about. So it is very important. It just, sometimes I find those questions funny, but if you can look at them as an opportunity, I think it's even better. I would love, this is one of my favorite parts of this podcast, is if you could take us through a day in your life, and we could do it. I'm sure every day is very, very different, but kind of however you want to do it, whatever days you find most interesting, I would love for you to take us through a day.
Yeah, I mean, if I have a show that day, I'll give you the rundown of Perfect. That. But yeah, like you said, I think every day is a little bit different. Every day, it could be a different show. It's a different sport, clearly. Mm-hmm. But I live in Southern California, and I like to try to get in a workout. These days, I've been doing a lot of Pilates.
Me too. I love Pilates.
Yeah, I enjoy the Pilates. I was always sort of like a CrossFitter or a boot camper, or like, you know, I still love my ability. I need to do strength training, but the Pilates is a nice tone setter. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to get in a workout. I have a 5-pound, I don't even know what he is. I guess he's a Chihuahua something. I mean, he definitely yaps and barks like a Chihuahua. Aww. So, and he's the cutest thing ever. His name is Milo. I'm obsessed with him. We try to get in a walk. I'll feed him. Then I head into the studio. You know, we'll be there for however long. And then, of course, I drive home. And then, you know, I'm a social person. I love getting together with my girlfriends. So whether it's having some girlfriends over, drinking wine, I love to cook, you know, we'll do that, or we'll go out and grab, you know, a bite somewhere in the LA area. So, you know, big picture, that's kind of the generic day. It's not all that exciting. Again, it can change from day to day, but that's usually the gist.
Well, this has been awesome. We can't let you go yet because we have to do 5 fun facts, but I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've enjoyed your insight. I think you've taught me a lot, and I appreciate that. So thank you so much for just being open and honest and sharing with us.
No, thank you so much for having me.
So it's time for 5 fun facts, and I'm sure our listeners are sick of me telling this quick little intro, but it is something I started with the 49ers players, and they do it on video and share things about themselves that people wouldn't otherwise know. But for this podcast, we thought we would change it around a little bit, and we ask everybody the same 5 questions every episode, and I love it because we really get such different answers. So if you're ready, we will do 5 fun facts with Erin Coscarelli.
Let's do it.
What is your favorite moment in sports?
Okay. The moment that I love that has always stood out to me because it's so symbolic of never giving up. And I'm sorry for people that hate New England, but that Super Bowl in Houston where New England was trailing by 25 points.
I was there. It was amazing.
I was in Houston, you know, doing all the pre-Super Bowl stuff for NFL Network. And I mean, I really, like, I could not believe that happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I always like to correlate sports to real life situations. It was just such an iconic moment in sports, whether you love Tom Brady or you hate him, not giving up and really believing, you know. And even in tennis, it's such a mental sport. If you just stay in it, you do the best you can, and whatever, win or lose, you know, I think how you see things, it really lends itself to big picture, real life stuff. And I loved that moment because, I mean, it was just incredible. I mean, it was in the bag for the Falcons, and forget it, Tom Brady was in it, and, you know, he ended up pulling off the W.
It was rather incredible. What is your life motto?
Oh, gosh. Okay. My life motto, let's keep it with the sports theme. Sometimes you win, sometimes you learn.
Oh, I love that. Sometimes right? you win, sometimes you learn. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I love it.
I love that.
It's a good motto because if you lose, it's really not a loss. It's like an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to grow. And I, you know, I've had a lot of unfortunate losses within the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. And I've gotten a PhD in needing to learn from my losses. So it's a good one for me, for sure.
I love that. next one is go-to workout, which we may have covered, but nonetheless.
It's been the Pilates. I've been doing the Pilates a lot lately.
Mm-hmm. What is your go-to coffee order?
Dirty chai vanilla latte.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. I might need to get one of those. And last but certainly not least, a book every woman should read.
Oh my God. This book I read when I was up in the surf ranch. I love this book. I don't just recommend it for women. I recommend it for all young people, but for sure women. It is The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. It's by Mark Manson. I want to say his last name is Manson. And it's such a great read. It really is. It's you'll love it. It's an easy read. The F word's in it all the time. And I think it's a great book to read when you're younger, but for sure sometimes I pick it up and read it again. So The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, it's a good one.
Fantastic. Erin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Tracy.
Please let everyone know where they can find you.
Social media, if you want to follow me on X or Instagram. I'm really not a TikToker, sorry guys, but it's just my first and last name, Erin Coscarelli.
Wonderful. You guys can find me or find us on Instagram at Fangirl Sports Network. You can find me at Tracy Sandler, on X at Tracy FGSN. We are brought to you by Bet Online. And I believe those are all my announcements. So with that, I'll talk to everybody next time. Bye, y'all.